Okay, so there's a homework due. You can hand it in here at the end of the class. And therefore, those of you who missed last class, if you haven't looked at the web page, you will see that there's a project out. Okay, so make sure you start on it early. Okay, use the auto grader as much as you can. You can use it once a day. Okay, and you can use, you get 3 bonus attempts to get your project graded. So make use of this as often as you can to get your program right. In the discussion section tomorrow, I'll have Sashi provide some help. Okay, you can come with your questions. He's going to provide some hints as well as answer your questions. Okay, and then we'll again review material on pthreads that you need to know for the programming assignments. Okay, now that's one thing. The second thing is I had already mentioned a couple of times that there's a midterm coming at the end of the month. Okay, it's going to be on October 28th. Okay, just make a note of this. I'll put this up on the web page. Okay, that's a Tuesday. Okay, it's going to be an evening exam. Okay, so same room, except that we will not have a class on that day. Okay, we'll skip the class because I don't want to teach when there's an exam due on the same day, and we'll just have the exam in the evening, 6 o'clock in this room. Okay. So I'll send out an email announcing this again, just as a reminder. But keep that in mind. That's 3 weeks to go. It's well after the project is due, so you shouldn't have anything due when there is an exam. But just a reminder to keep up with the course. Okay, this is chapter 6, which we are going to finish today. We'll start chapter 7 next time. So we have covered quite a bit of ground, and it is your responsibility to keep up. Okay, the homework is meant precisely to make sure you read. Okay, that's where you can actually try to address some of the issues that come up in the course. Okay, so let's continue where we left off last time. Okay, we were talking about monitors. Okay, so if you remember, we had this discussion on locks. Then we talked about semaphores. We said we need a higher level abstraction, and we said monitors are a good abstraction that allow us to program without some of the low level details about locks and so on. Okay, now towards the end we were talking about condition variables that you get in with monitors and whether you can implement them with semaphores. Okay, so I showed 2 simple implementation that we agreed don't work. Okay, so condition variable, remember what a condition variable is. It's an abstraction that allows you to release a lock and put a thread to sleep in a single atomic operation. Okay. So they have wait and signal. Wait allows you to release a lock and go to sleep in a condition variable, and signal allows you to signal some sleeping thread and wake it up. Okay, so we said you have wait and signal, why not just implement a library of condition variables using a library of semaphores? And we said that doesn't work. Okay, for the simple reason, wait doesn't take an argument, the lock that you're supposed to release. Okay, so here is the second attempt to implement condition variables using semaphores. Here wait does take a lock, so you're supposed to release this lock and go to sleep. So you do a release and you do a wait on the semaphore. Okay, that is being used for the condition variable. And we said, okay, that does work. It basically allows you to release the lock and put the thread to sleep. But the problem is that semaphores have some notion of history associated with them. Whenever you do a signal, you increment the semaphore. Whenever you do a wait, you decrement the semaphores. That's not true for condition variables. Okay, so we said that wait and signal in semaphores are commutative, but in condition variables, that's not the case. If you do a signal on a condition variable, and then there is no thread blocked on that condition variable, the signal is lost. Okay? At the same time, in a semaphore, if you do a signal, and even if there is no thread waiting for the semaphore, you will increment the semaphore. So a subsequent wait will cause the semaphore to get decremented. Okay? This is not true in case of a condition variable. Any wait causes you to block, regardless of what's happening. So we said that doesn't work. So what do we need to do? So this is our third attempt to implement monitors with semaphores. Okay, so here main code is here. Okay, So the basic idea is we want to ignore a signal if there is no one waiting. Yeah, that because semaphores don't do that automatically. So that's what we are going to do here. So this is the main code. So you actually check for every thread that is waiting, you increment a counter there. Okay, whenever you do a wait, you increment that waiter's variable. So in signal, you are going to see, is the number of waiters not greater than zero? Okay. So if there is a thread waiting, then we don't have a problem. Then it's fine to go ahead and decrement, and that's what we will do. But on the other hand, if the number of waiters is actually zero, then signal shouldn't do anything. Okay. That's exactly what this code does. Okay. Only when the number of waiters is greater than zero do you actually go and do a signal on the semaphore. Otherwise, you don't do anything. This is equivalent to saying if there's no waiting thread, condition variable signals are lost and they don't do anything. That's exactly what you do. If there's no waiters, then you don't even do the signal. It's equivalent to saying I signaled but nothing happened. The signal got lost. Okay? So that's the basic change you have to make in order for this to work. Okay? If you do all of this, then you can implement monitors using, implement a monitor using a semaphore. Okay? Is this clear? So do go back and look at this code carefully and let me know if you have questions. Yes.
If this is the same thing as the wait, why is it, or the locks, why would it be better to implement the monitors using semaphores instead of using locks?
Why would it be better to implement monitors using semaphores? So there are two things that monitors have, right? So as I mentioned, monitors give you two abstractions. They give you an abstraction of a lock. They give you an abstraction called condition variables that allow you to wait and signal threads and wake them up. Okay? So if you just use a pure lock, you can certainly do this part of it, but you cannot do this. Okay? So here semaphores are actually being used for both purposes. There is a mutex semaphore. There is a lock semaphore that provides functionality number one, and there is this other semaphore that provides the functionality of a condition variable. So you need to do both. Okay, that's why you want semaphore. Lock will only give you one of the two, not the other one. Okay. Is this clear? Any questions here? Okay. So the basic class is, so in any method, okay, what you have to do is you basically acquire the lock at the beginning of the method and you release the lock at the end, and if you need to do condition variables in there, you can use condition, wait and signal. Okay? I already said Java does this automatically for you. This lock acquire and lock signal, okay, are internally done by the JVM for you if you use the synchronized keyword in Java. Okay? This was how do you use this in C++. That was the discussion, just to recap where we are. Okay, so that's all I have to say here. What we are going to do is actually switch back to today's lecture. Okay. So what we are going to do today is just look at some classical problems in synchronization. So we have actually covered all of the abstractions. We talked about locks, what they are, how they can be used to implement critical sections. We talked about semaphores, how they can be used to guard resources, okay, either a single resource or some number of resources, which would be a counting semaphore. We said how can you use semaphores to do scheduling, and then we looked at this abstraction of a monitor, okay, and the notion of a condition variable. So now we will switch back and say look at what are some classical problems in synchronization and how can you use some of these ideas, locks or semaphores or monitors, to implement them. So we are going to look at two such problems today, the reader-writers problem and the dining philosophers problems. Okay? So let's start with the reader-writers and then we'll talk about dining philosophers. Okay? So in the reader-writer problem, it's an abstract problem and the problem is as follows. So assume that there are some number of threads, okay, that are sharing a global data structure. So threads can either write to this data structure, which means they modify it, or they can read this data structure. Okay? So a thread can either be a reader or a writer at any given instance. Okay? And the synchronization problem is to ensure that you have mutually exclusive access to this data structure while allowing as much concurrency as possible. Okay? Is this clear, the problem statement? Now it is trivial to solve this problem by just using a regular lock. Okay, so we are basically assume that you have a class. So let's say there's a class you have some data structure. Okay, doesn't matter what it is, it could be a linked list, array, doesn't matter. Okay, it's a shared data structure. Okay, and you can do two operations on this data structure. You can read it, okay, or read some value in it, or you can write. Okay, so there are two methods here. A read method and your write method. Okay. The trivial implementation of read and write, basically we'll just do lock acquire. Then you will read whatever you want to read. If this is an array, you may read the ith element of the array or whatever it is. Okay. And then you do lock release. Okay. Then you do the same thing for write. Do lock acquire, you write to this data structure, and you do lock release. Okay. So this we know how to do, because you know how locks work. Okay. The question is, why is this not a good solution for the readers writers problems? Yes.
It doesn't maximize concurrency.
Okay. It doesn't maximize concurrency. Why? This guarantee is safety. Okay, it ensures synchronization and nothing bad will happen. Okay. But doesn't. Okay. So only one. So what this guarantees to you is only one thread can read or write at a time. Okay, because you have to acquire a lock, and if you are the thread that holds a lock, no other thread can do anything, regardless of what operation they are interested in. Okay. Now for reading, clearly read is not a destructive operation. You can allow multiple threads to read at the same time. Okay, maybe some thread wants to read the ith element of the array and some other thread wants to read the jth element of the array. Okay, and that's fine to allow both threads to do this at the same time. Okay. Now when it comes to writing, you don't want when a thread is writing, you don't want anyone else to do anything to this data structure at that time. Okay. So now the lock is a single solution that you are using for both readers as well as writers. And this reduces the concurrency for readers, because what this solution does is it that allows only one reader at a time or only one writer at a time. Okay? What you want is a solution that will allow an arbitrary number of readers to all read at the same time, or a single writer to write and no one else can do anything, neither reads nor writes. Okay? That would be a better solution for the reader-writer problem. Okay? That's what is said here. So if you use a single lock on the data object, that's overly restrictive. That is going to work. Okay, but that is more restrictive than you need to solve this problem. Okay, what you want is many writers should read the object at the same time, but only allow one writer. Okay, if the writer is writing, no one else can read or write, but if someone is reading, then you can allow other readers in. Okay, but you block out writers. Okay, that's so the correctness criteria is exactly what is said here. You have a critical section, okay, and both read or write need to be within the critical section, allow multiple readers to execute in the critical section, but guarantee mutual exclusion for writers. Okay? So now you want a solution that guarantees these properties for us. So we look at a couple of these solutions next. Okay, so here is the first version. So we look at three variants of reader-writers. Actually, this is the first variant. Okay? So it's class called read-write. There are two public methods. Okay, read and write. Okay, this is a solution using semaphores. Okay, there are two semaphores. There's a mutex semaphores that you use to control access to readers. There's a write semaphores that controls access to the first reader or writer. Okay, so initially the number of readers is 0 and the value of both semaphores is set to 1. Okay, so here is the code for read, here's the code for write. So the writer code is very simple. It just looks like this code, because that's exactly what you want. Okay? You want to do a wait on the semaphore. So you are using the semaphore as a lock in this case. You do a wait, which is like you acquire the lock, you perform the write, and you do a lock release by doing a signal. Okay? When you do that, no one else can enter the system. Okay? You grab the lock. So that code is exactly identical to this code, except that you are using semaphores here. Okay? You are using a binary semaphore, which I said is equivalent to a lock. So writers is simple. This is the code for readers. Okay, what do? You grab the mutex. Okay, so this ensures mutual exclusion. Okay, you increment the number of readers by 1. Okay, if you are the first reader, okay, if readers equals equals 1 means you are the first reader to enter the system, you block all the writers. Okay, so you are the first reader, you want to make sure no other writer enters until there is all readers are exited. Okay, so you do this to block all of the writers, and then you release the mutex. Okay, and then you perform the read. And then you do the opposite once you are done. You again grab the lock, you decrement the number of readers because you are done. Okay, and if you are the last reader to exit, okay, meaning the number of readers goes to 0, then you re-enable writers. Okay, meaning if there's a writer block, you allow them in, okay, and you release the lock. Okay. Now it is important that this read is not really protected by a lock. Okay, unlike the write, which is protected by a lock, you'll see that you acquire the mutex and you release it and then you perform the read. Okay. So arbitrary number of readers can be doing read at the same time. Okay. Let's say the first reader comes in, you grab the lock, increment the number of readers, you block out the writer, you release the lock and you start doing a long read. Okay. Next reader could come in, it would grab the lock, it would increment the number of readers. Okay. Now the number of readers goes to 2. This if doesn't do anything, you already blocked all the writers, you release the lock and you start again perform the read. So the first reader may still be reading and you can also do the read. So each subsequent reader is just going to increment the readers, the number of readers. Okay, and then start doing the read. Okay, so you can have arbitrary number of readers that are entering the system all at the same time. Okay, and as each reader leaves, you have to decrement the number of readers. This reader keeps track of how many readers are in the system. Okay, and if you are the last one, you re-enable the writers. That's all. Okay, is this clear? Any questions on this solution? This is a good solution? Does it do better than that? Yes.
Well, with the writing, wouldn't we be able to also write as long as they're not being read?
So if there is no readers, you can write. That's exactly what that does. You do grab the lock and you perform the write and you release the lock. Okay? If you're the first reader, notice that what this reader did. He also grabbed the write lock. To prevent any other writer from entering the system. Okay, this is how you block writers. If you are the first reader, you hold the lock. Okay, and if you are the last reader, you release the lock. That's how you block all the writers. But if there are no readers at all, you just go get the lock and you write.
So if you have too many readers,
you
slow down the writers?
Yes. So we'll come to that. Just 1 second. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, this is great.
Okay. So, all right. So now, question is, what could be wrong with this solution? And that was the point that was raised here. This is a solution that prefers readers over writers. Okay? Because if you are the first reader, you enter the system and you start reading and you already blocked all the writers. Suppose that a writer comes in, the writer is blocked. Okay? And you can have a continuous stream of readers coming in. So long as there is some number of readers in the system, the number of readers is never going to go to zero and that writer is going to starve. Okay. In other words, later arriving readers can jump over that writer that is blocked and still get read access, because we said we can allow any number of readers. There is still one reader, another one can come in, that reader exits and this reader is reading. Okay. So you can still can have a constant number of readers entering the system and the writer is still blocked. Okay. Until the number of readers actually goes to zero, you will not be able to perform that write. Is this clear or not? This is clear why there is unfairness. This is a correct solution, but it is unfair to writers because it favors readers over writers. So now we look at another one that tries to address this problem. Okay, so what could be a way to correct this problem? What would be a fair solution? Yes.
Have some sort of control where if there are readers and then there is a writer coming. So you give the priority to
the
writer, then to the next
reader. Okay. So basically, the way to ensure fairness is to service readers and writers in first come, first serve order. Okay. Take the order in which they arrive. Suppose there's a reader that comes in, there's a writer that came after that. Let's call this R1. This is the first reader. And R2 arrives. Okay, this guy is already gone in and he's actually reading. He's blocked. Okay. This solution will let this reader also enter the system, because as the writer is blocked, the reader is still holds the lock. So this reader is going to jump over that writer and enter. Okay. If you wanted to do FCFS order, what you would should say is that there is a writer that came in ahead of you. I am going to service that writer and then let you in. Okay? Is this clear? So let me make this slightly better. So let's say the first reader came in, R2 came in, and that also went has entered the system. W1 came and it's blocked. There are two readers in the system and W1 is blocked. If R3 comes, you want to make sure that this, if you want to do FCFS order, you will service them in that order. So you will block this reader temporarily, let the writer go first, and then if there are some number of readers that have come after that, they all get to go in. Okay? So you are basically doing FCFS service. So W2 gets to go ahead after this, and so that's a fair solution. Okay, so I think this is pretty clear as to what happens here. I'm not going to go through this scenario. No. So in this case, fairness doesn't actually take into account the amount of time for a read and a write. Okay, if you wanted to take that into account, that's a different problem altogether. If reads take longer than writes, or there are long reads, then fairness also depends on how long you have to wait in the system. Here you are just ensuring FCFS. It doesn't tell you how long you have to wait. Okay, this write may take a long time and then reads may take short times and so on. Okay, so you are not taking the time into account, just the order in which you arrive. Okay. So first scenario, so just to go back to this solution we already talked about. So here this reader R1 gets to go in, okay, there's no writers. R2 also gets to go in, W1 has to block, okay, because it's the writer, until both R1 and R2 finish. Okay, it should be clear as to what's happening. Okay. Here W1 arrives first, or W1 blocks out all the readers and writers. So R1 will come and block and R2 will come and block until W1 has finished. Okay, once W1 finishes, both of these get to go in, okay, and go do their reads. That's what the reader-writer problem does. Okay, this was a solution that in sort of shows you why it is unfair. That was the same example here. R1 goes in, okay, W1 comes in, blocks. Okay, R2 comes in, and so long as R1 is still holding the law, still reading, R2 will be able to go in. Okay, and that's why it's unfair to W1, because W1 came before R1, yet we let R2 in. Okay, because we wanted to maximize concurrence. Okay, that's the problem we'll try to address. Okay, so the alternative semantics is to make it more fair for writers. Okay, let the writer enter the critical section as soon as possible. So here is a solution that is going to favor writers. Okay, so here is what you have to do. Okay, you'll have a new mutex called a write mutex. Okay, you will first acquire the lock on there to ensure mutual exclusion. You increment the number of writers. Okay, so you're saying I'm a writer. If you are the first writer, you're going to block all the readers. Okay, which is what you want. If you are the writer, you want to block all the readers. By grabbing that mutex, you have already blocked out the writer, so that's not a problem. Okay, you block all the readers, and then you grab the write lock, okay, and then you block other writers, perform the write, and then you do the opposite. Okay, so you are whatever you did for reads, you are also doing for writes. Okay, if you are the first writer, you will block all of the readers, and then you will also grab the write lock, perform the write, okay, and then release the write lock. Decrement the number of writers. If the number of writers becomes zero, okay, you enable the readers. And this is the code for read. Yeah, so you basically check. So what you have to check here is there a writer? Okay, so if you are a reader, first you check, is there a writer ahead of me? That's what the first statement does. Ensures that at most one reader will go before a pending writer. Okay. So if W1 came and incremented that wait, then you will basically block it. Okay, so because you are the R3 and W1 has already come and said there's a pending write. Okay, so if you block on pending write, that means there is at least one writer ahead of you, so you are not allowed to go in. Okay, and then you just do the old code. You basically increment the number of readers. Okay, then you basically, if you're the first reader, you block out all the writers and then you release it, you perform the read, okay, and so on. Okay, is the concept clear what we are trying to do here? Okay, if there is no writer, then that wait is not going to do anything. okay, because that, so you can just multiple readers can enter. It's the same, read code is the same, except that you will check, is there a writer that's come ahead of you and waiting to get in. If so, you will block that reader. Otherwise, you will let arbitrary number of readers in. Any questions?
I don't see how this favors writers over readers.
Okay, so you don't see why this favors writers over readers. So, what was the, let's go back and try to understand what happened in the, do you understand the problem with the first solution?
Yes.
Okay.
Because the writers can just pop in whatever they want.
Okay. So, the basic thing that we have done, okay.
Yeah.
So, in the first solution, readers could jump over writers. Okay? In this solution, what happens is when a writer comes, he basically increments a count. Okay, so I think I am going in the wrong direction. Okay. So, in this case, a writer, whenever writers come in, they basically grab a lock. Okay? And the readers are also trying to make grab that pending lock. So if there is a reader, if the writer has come ahead of you, you would have already done the write pending wait.
So these are different locks. Like there's multiple locks in play. There's the write pending, there's the
yes.
read lock or whatever.
Yes.
So you can, oh, see, I'm more ready there.
Right. So basically what it's the equivalent to saying, the pseudo code for that, and if you ignore all of that, is the read, we'll check. Is there pending write? Okay, so you first check this. Is there a pending writer ahead of you? So in this case, if R3 had come after W1, the answer here would be yes. Okay, if this condition holds true, that says you shouldn't go into the system for fairness reasons. Okay, you should wait and let these readers finish, then let this writer go next, and then you should go. That's what you're trying to do in this solution. Okay, so that's exactly what that wait does for you. It ensures that at most one reader will go if there's a pending write. The rest of the code is the same. If this condition is not true, meaning there is no, if this W1 hadn't come into the system, this would be false. So then all of these readers get to go in, because every time you check, is there a writer? No. So let all the readers in. Okay, so that's exactly what you're doing. Yes, you have a question?
So the write pending wait basically acts as a block until that wait is released.
Yes.
Until that
wait is released. Yes. That's the basic idea.
Yes.
Yeah. So here is the, I'll show you the same thing with monitors. Yeah, this may be easier to understand. Yeah, so here is prepare to read, done read. So this is our Java, this is Java code now. Okay, so you have the synchronized keyword. So you do prepare to read, and you basically check, while the number of writers is greater than zero, you are a reader, you will block. Okay? But if there are no writers, then you get to go in. Okay? And when you are done reading, so you increment the number of readers. When you are done reading, you decrement, and if you are the last reader, then you notify saying, wake up anyone who is blocked. Okay? And this is the read method. You prepare to read, do the reading, and then you go call done reading. Okay, and here is the number of here's the code for writers. You call this prepare to write, you increment the number of writers. Okay, if there's already a reader, then you cannot even go in. Okay, you have to wait until that. Otherwise, you go in, and then when you are done, you decrement the number of writers and you do a notify on your condition variable. Okay, this is exactly the same solution using Java. Okay. So look at what has happened. So this is your read method. You'll call prepare to read, which means this is this statement executes. So you'll check, is there a writer ahead of me? Okay, I am a reader. I'm going to check if there's a writer ahead of me. I will wait. Okay, if there's no writer ahead of me, then it means that you can go in and read concurrently with other readers. Okay, so you just increment the number of readers. Then you do the read, and then you're done reading. So you decrement saying you're done. And then you check, if I'm the last reader, I should do a notify and wake anyone else who is blocked on this condition variable. Okay, and the writers do slightly different stuff. So you basically do synchronized here, so only one writer. So that's something I should mention. This is not synchronized. Okay, if this were synchronized, you would only allow one reader in the system. So this is not synchronized, so it allows multiple readers. Okay, but the write method here is synchronized, which means there is only one writer, and if this is the writer, no reader can enter either. Okay, so you call prepare to write. Okay, so if you are the first writer, I mean you increment the writer. If you are and if there is already a reader, the num reader is not equal to zero, then you have to block, okay, because the readers are still reading, you cannot enter. Okay, so you will do a wait. Okay, and eventually the last reader is actually going to do a notify and wake you up. Okay, and then you can go in and do the write. Okay, you do the writing and then you decrement the number of writers and you do a notify. Okay, yes, question.
Are the writers and readers sharing a condition variable in this case?
Yes, the writers and readers are sharing. Yeah. That is the condition variable that's implemented by the Java monitor class, right? So that's what the notify and the wait does for you.
So this is equivalent to the first solution we had, where yes. The readers have preference.
No, there is no preference over readers, because the readers are actually, it's equivalent to the second solution, because the reader is actually checking if there's a writer ahead of you and blocking. If you had removed this while statement, okay, then it would become equivalent to the first solution. Then readers are arbitrarily going in and reading even and jumping over writers. Because you put this in, it is fair.
Okay. And that's what forces the fairness.
Yes. Is this clear? Okay, so I said, so here is a question. Okay. I said that this uses synchronized. Okay, so there's only one writer at a time. Okay, but if there's a writer, the writer needs to also block out readers. Okay, but the read method does not have synchronized. Okay, so if the writer comes in first, okay, you have to convince yourself that a reader will come and block. Does that happen? Or not? Okay, so you will see that there is this thing is that synchronized there. Okay, and then you also check that the number of writers is greater than zero. So if there's a writer already in there, you will not even enter the prepare to read, because that's synchronized. So you, the writer has the lock, so you are actually locked out from even executing that method. Okay, so you do get what you need by cleverly using the synchronized keyword. You shouldn't put synchronized here, otherwise you will be back to the lock, the simple lock solution, where you will only have either one reader or one writer. Okay, so read method shouldn't be synchronized, write method should be synchronized, reader should block if there are any writers ahead of them. Okay, and writers should make sure that there are no readers, okay, which is what they do. Yeah, and then they enter. Okay? This is clear. Okay. Now the good news is if you use pthreads, you don't have to worry about any of this. Okay? Pthreads has a type of a lock called a read-write lock which does everything for you. All of the stuff that we talked about is automatic. Just as your lock acquire and lock release, instead of declaring a normal lock, you declare what's called a read-write lock. Okay? So you can actually declare a special type of a lock called a read-write lock and you initialize it, and then you can acquire the lock either as a reader or you acquire the lock as a writer, and the lock does all of the magic for you. Okay? So you can say read-write lock and grab the read lock, okay? Or you can grab the write lock. Okay? And it gives you exactly the semantics you want. Okay? Multiple threads can hold the read lock at the same time. If any thread holds the write lock, everyone else is blocked, whether they are readers or writers. Okay, and then there's a single unlock that allows you to unlock. Okay, so in pthreads, all of this is automatically handled because they are introduced this read-write-lock abstraction that does this for you. Okay, but it's important to understand how this works. Okay, and that how this works with all of the stuff that we talked about. Okay, so internally they do some of this to implement this library method. Okay, so if you actually need a read-write-lock for anything, you can even implement it on your own using some of the techniques we discussed. Or the better solution is just to use the read-write lock that's already provided for you. Okay, is this clear? Okay. So the next problem we are going to talk about is what is called a dining philosopher's problem. Okay, so what this does is as follows. There are n philosophers, although it says 5 here. Assume that there are n of these. Let me just erase this. So, there are n philosophers sitting on a table. Okay, so, let's assume it's a round table. This is 1. They have a plate in front of them. This. Okay. So philosopher can either eat or think. Any philosopher could either be eating at any given time or thinking. If you are doing thinking, then you don't need to do anything. Okay. But before you eat, you need to grab a chopstick. In particular, you need to know, grab two chopsticks, your left chopstick and a right chopstick. So this is how the table is set up. There's a table, there's a plate in front of each philosopher. There's a chopstick or a fork to your left and a fork to your right. Okay? And this chopstick is shared by you and your neighbor. Okay? So before you eat, you have to grab both your left and your right chopstick. And then if you grab both, you get to eat. If you get only one, then you have to wait for the other one. Okay? So in other words, the chopstick is a shared resource. Okay? And you are sharing it between yourself and your neighbor. Okay? The left one is shared between your left neighbor and the right one is shared between your right neighbor. You can arbitrarily get hungry at any point in time. Okay? And decide you want to eat. Okay? But before you can eat, you have to grab both of your chopsticks. Okay? And if your neighbor is already eating, clearly you have to wait for them to be done eating and put their chopsticks down before you can grab it and eat. Okay? So question is, and then after you are done eating, you go back to thinking. Okay? So question is, how do you come up with a set of synchronization primitives that will allow you to address this problem? Is the problem clear before I even talk about a solution? Okay. So here is the first solution. Okay. We will use semaphores to do this. So let's assume 5 philosophers, but this works for any n. Okay. So you declare 5 semaphores. Okay. 1 lock for each chopstick. Okay. Basic idea, the basic code is, get your left chopstick, acquire the left chopstick, meaning grab a lock on the left chopstick, grab a lock on the right, then eat, release that lock, release the other lock, think, and then you loop. Okay, that's our first solution. So you will grab this lock, then you'll try to grab the other lock. If you get both, okay, you could block here, you could block there, doesn't matter. Okay, but if you get both, then you go and eat. Yeah, and then you release these locks. Okay. Is this solution clear? What's happening here? Okay. Now question is, does this work? What does it give you? Is it fair, not fair, correct, incorrect? Yes.
It wouldn't be fair because if you're blocked on the left but the right is available, then you're still waiting on the left before you can even decide to choose the right.
But that's fine. You can, if you eventually you'll get the left, and then if the right is still available, you'll grab it. If not, you'll wait for the right.
While you're waiting for the left, what if your right is grabbed by
the other? Okay. So while you're waiting for the left, what happens if your right is grabbed? Yeah, so you'll eventually acquire the left. Okay, so you are initially, what you said is you're blocked on the left, because left one is in use, right one is available. Okay. So you, let's say at some point, you get hold of your left chopstick. Okay? But by that time, the right one is in use. So you will actually have acquired this and you'll come and block here. And then eventually the right one becomes available. So you will grab that and then you go and eat. Okay, so you are waiting for this one. Okay, you don't even check the right one. So then you get hold of this, then you say, can I get the right one? And then you wait for that, and when you get that, you eat. Yes.
What if everybody grabs the left chopstick?
Yes. That's a good question. What happens if everyone decides to get hungry together and they grab the left one? Then everyone will always be blocked for the right one. Yes. You are waiting. Can neither eat nor think. It's bad for philosophers.
I think the same problem would happen if they all grab the right one.
Yeah. So this solution has...
Yeah. In this case, you can't have everybody...
Yeah, in this case, yeah.
So this has a deadlock problem. Okay, you can all become hungry and you grab the left one, and then you are all waiting for the right one, but nobody is going to release the right one.
I don't think the opposite
happens. Now what if you modified this solution and said, I grab the left one, but if my right one is in use, I am going to voluntarily give up the left one, and then I am going to retry. This is question clear? So if everyone grabs the left one, then you will all be blocked for your right and nobody is going to release. You will be deadlocked. Okay? So alternative solution, this is version 1, doesn't work. Okay, version 1.5 is I grab the left one. Okay? If I get hold of it, but the right one is in use, then I am going to release the left one. I am going to try to get both.
Still deadlocked. If everybody tries to do it at the same time, they're going to grab it, put it down, and then replay.
Right.
An infinite number of times. Assuming they're all automatons, right here. But maybe exponential backup. So it doesn't work.
So if you could be, exactly. So you could have the same problem. Just releasing the right one doesn't, or the left one doesn't help, because you may just go into a loop. You pick up your left one, see what the right one is, and you put it down. Everybody puts it down at the same time. Everyone picks up the left one, look at the right, put it down, and you'll just be in a loop. Okay? So you may never actually get hold of your right chopstick.
What if you put in a condition like only two left can be grabbed? Two left is already grabbed, and the third person can't grab the left.
Okay, you could put conditions saying I can only have two philosophers eating at a time. Okay, that will work, but it won't give you the maximum concurrency. Right? If you want to maximize concurrency, if it looks like all the odd ones become hungry at the same time, that's fair. Everyone gets all of the chopsticks and you're ready to eat. Okay, that gives you maximum concurrency. Or all the even ones become hungry at the same time, even numbered philosophers. Then also you get maximum concurrence. Only problem happens if two neighbors become hungry at the same time, one of them has to wait. Okay? Because one of them is going to grab the chopstick and the other one has to wait. Okay? So if you want to maximize concurrency, none of these solutions will work. You could do that, there's no problem, but it won't give you the property of having maximum concurrency. It may have correctness, yes.
I was thinking if you swap the signals, then you put down the right chopstick, but you wouldn't be able to fire it anyway.
Right.
Picked up the
lottery,
so. Yeah.
Yes. So does back off work, either exponential or random?
So you could do random back off. It doesn't guarantee anything, because it depends on the random number generator to make everyone grab their chopstick at different points in time. So it may randomize things and things may work. Right? So the whole problem here is when things happen at the same time.
Right.
Okay. Randomization may not allow philosophers to become hungry at the same time or cause them to back off for arbitrary amounts of time. Okay, but the question is there a deterministic solution? Okay, then we can worry about whether you want to randomize it or not. Okay? So what are the properties you need for your deterministic solution? Okay. The property you need is you want to grab both the left and the right at the same time or block. The reason we are having all this problem is if you do them one at a time, I grab the first one and then I grab the second one, then you have this problem where everyone grabs the first one, and then everyone is blocked on the second. You put it back, you go back into this loop. Okay? So what you want to do essentially is to check are both available at the same time, and if so, you grab both of them atomically. Okay? Only one is available, don't even bother to grab it, just keep checking. Okay, only when both are available and then you grab them atomically, then you are fine. Then you will not have this problem. Okay? So that's the basic idea. Okay, that's what this thing does. This version 2 of our... this uses monitors just to simplify the problem. So we'll assume that each of these methods is protected by a lock, which I haven't shown here. So what do you have? Now you introduce a third state. So you have three states, thinking and eating. But we'll introduce a state called hungry. And hungry is where you are actually going to check before you do anything. Okay, so before you transition from to eating, you are going to go into the hungry state. Okay? So there are two methods, pick up and put down. Pick up is where you try to grab the chopsticks, put down is when you are done. Okay, and you put them down. Okay? So what happens? So here is the initial code as everyone is thinking. Okay? Suppose some philosopher becomes hungry. Okay? You call pick up, saying pick up both chopsticks. Okay? So I am philosopher I say go pick up my chopstick. So you will first set your own state to hungry. Indicate that I want chopsticks at this point. Okay? And then you call this test method, okay? Which is right there. So the test method says, it basically checks, is my left neighbor eating and my right neighbor is eating. Okay? If I do this, the opposite, if my left neighbor is not eating and the right neighbor is not eating and I am hungry, okay, then I know that I can grab the chopstick. Because only if one of them or both of them are eating, are one or both chopsticks not available. So I check, is my left chopstick available, is my right chopstick available? Okay. If the answer is yes, I will transition to eating and I have grabbed both of my chopsticks. Okay. If either of these conditions is not true, you are going to block. Okay, that's the basic idea. So, and that happens here. So if you exit from that and you are not eating yet, okay, if both are available, you set your own state to eating. But if one of them is already eating, one of your neighbors is eating, you are not going to set your state to eating, you will still be hungry. So you come out here and you are still hungry, then you have to wait. Okay? The magic is actually happening in the test function. The test function is checking atomically, okay, whether both chopsticks are available at the same time. Why is it atomic? What in there tells you it's atomic? The check is atomic. Yes. It's a monitor, right? So there's a lock protecting this method. So if you are in the test function, no one else could be testing. In fact, no one else can even call pickup. And because this is all protected by lock, so all the magic is actually done for you. There is no notion of a lock here. You're just writing code that checks value of a variable. And this is abstract code. It's neither Java nor C. Yeah, it's not the Java. It's actually code that's from the textbook. So this is what is in your text. Okay. So this will map to some actual implementation. But in that implementation, you would have just put synchronize if this was Java, or you would have actually protected the lock, put the lock here, the lock acquire release. So in any case, the test, if you are calling test, it's guaranteed that nobody else is testing, okay, because this is protected by a lock. So you can safely check if both of your neighbors are eating or not, and nobody else can change their state while you are checking this. So if they are both not eating and their chopsticks are available, you have grabbed it all in one atomic operation because you have encapsulated the whole thing by a lock. Okay? Is this clear? What has happened here? And that's all that you do. And then the put down, you just go back to thinking and you are just releasing your chopsticks. Yeah, so that this put down code is very simple. Okay, so this solution will work. It will actually give you what you want. It won't have any of these problems that we had before. Okay, and I use monitor so you can see how simple the code is. You don't have to have any ugliness. Okay, this doesn't look ugly. It's fairly small, but it has a deadlock problem. Okay, it's slightly more complicated here. So the basic idea is you go into the hungry mode and you check if both chopsticks are available, you grab them in one atomic operation and you are done. And then when you are done eating, you just put down your chopsticks and you release those resources. Go back to thinking. Any questions here? Yes.
How often would the first person learn to that?
Okay. That's a fair question. I mean, how often can you get into this problem? So, it may never happen. This code may well work for a long time. It all depends on what are called race conditions. These are the nasty bugs you have when you have threads. Okay? They are timing related issues. Okay? This code can only go wrong due to timing issues. All of them become hungry at the same time. Okay? And if you have that condition, it will not work. If you don't have that condition, it works beautifully. I mean, it will always work. You will think your code actually works. Okay? This is why thread-related code is very hard to debug, because bugs are often not reproducible. They depend on timing and order in which things happen. And next time you run the same code, things may happen in a different order. The same code may run in a different order, and you will not see that bug. These are really nasty bugs you always have in any threaded programs when you have synchronization, if you haven't gotten it right. Okay? You will not be able to reproduce code, because the code executes non-deterministically. It depends on timing, it depends on scheduling, who got scheduled, in what order and made this request, and so on and so forth. Okay? So you may actually never see it, because they don't get hungry at the same time, because they got scheduled in different orders. But at some point, you may actually, the bug will get triggered if that timing conditions are such that all of them get aligned and they all become hungry and you have this problem. Okay? So the issue is, regardless of the order in which you're scheduled, regardless of the timing issue, will the code work? If the answer is yes, then you have correct code. Okay, if the correctness of your code depends on timing or order in which things happen, you can never depend on that code to be correct. So there will be cases where it will go wrong. Okay? Although it may work well for long periods of time. This is why you still have problems in large systems, because most of them tend to be these timing errors. Okay? When you do debugging or you run test cases, you don't catch them because you may not see that condition occurring. Then you release the code and some user is using it and some weird things happen and some bug gets triggered, system crashes or deadlocks or some such things happen. Yeah, that's more important reason why you actually see these bugs in real production code, because these bugs are never easy to find. Right? In most of the code you will have tens of locks and tens of threads, and it's not easy to even reason and say, okay, this has this kind of problem. You have to find it by doing testing, and sometimes you don't. Yes.
Have there been any efforts to do stack analysis or multi-threaded code to look at parallel execution and say, I'm going to run every possible permutation or code execution, like it would be fantastically slow, but sort of seeing, you know, are there going to be resources or possible resources?
Right. So there are techniques which we will not talk about in this class, okay? But there are techniques that allow you to do systematic parallel execution that try to crash this code. But as you can see, the number of possibilities is exponential.
Yeah,
right? So you will not be able to do exhaustive analysis. You may do substantial checks, but not exhaustive, because exhaustive may be arbitrarily slow. Okay? But some of those techniques do arise, and they are actually called model checking. You basically model the program or the properties of the program, try all the permutations and see where some property fails. Yeah, so but we'll not talk about those here. What we will talk about next time actually is deadlock, the issue of deadlocks. We'll actually expand on this problem. Okay, so what is this abstract problem of a deadlock where all the threads block waiting for some other resource? How can you get around this problem of deadlocks? What are some safe things to do in your code so that you can avoid deadlocks or detect them at runtime and so on? So we'll actually do some analysis of the problem, or how to ensure that your code doesn't have this problem of deadlock. Yeah, but it won't be exhaustive, because that's actually chapter 7, which I'm going to start next time. Okay? Yes, you have a question.
Enumerating that probability, but is this, each one of those would be one of three states, I guess, each chopstick would be one of three states.
Each chopstick is in two states, either it's free or it's in use. Philosophers can be in one of three states. They could be eating, hungry, or thinking.
So the chopstick could be used by either the left one and the right.
Right. Yeah, but the state of the chopstick is it in use? This is a resource. This is protected by a lock. Is the resource available or in use? If it's in use, who is it in use is a different issue. Okay, that's not a property of the chopstick. It's a property of which philosopher is holding the chopstick. Right.
When you need to tag it by whether it's a left or the right philosopher picked up the chopstick.
No, all you are doing is you grab the left chopstick, because the, this code is just grabbing your left and your right, and if everyone grabs the left all at the same time and then they block on the right, they will block on the right because your right is someone else's left, so they picked it up at the same time, so you will block. Any other questions here on the dining philosopher's problem? So that's basically all I have today. Okay, that's basically the end of the discussion on synchronization as well. The next, so this was actually a 4-lecture discussion. Okay, we talked about locks, we talked about semaphores, talked about monitors, and then we looked at three problems. We looked at the producer-consumer problem, the reader-writer problem, and the dining-philosopher problem. These are abstract versions of problem that you actually face in any real code. Okay, although it looks like a cute problem, but if you actually write code that needs to do something interesting, you will face one or some variant of these problems, and that's why we looked at them here. Okay, yes, last question.
Can you give us a real world example of the dining philosophers? Because it's hard to kind of put into a context of the analogy versus.
So let me think of something that is interesting. I don't have some example at the top of my head, but next time I'll try to give real examples for all three, not just dining. Reader, writers, producer, consumers, dining philosophers, and then that will make it clear so what real world problems they map into. Okay, so I can come back with that. Okay, so let's stop here. If you have homeworks, hand them in.
It's
homework one, yes.
One more time, but just